This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. If you've been around digital signage for a while, you've almost certainly heard a discussion at some point about accurate color reproduction on screens and the problems big brands can have with that. The example used most often is Coca-Cola Red, which is a very specific red. It can be a problem at the display level, but it also has to do with the source. A small research team of academics and students at Clemson University in South Carolina are well down the path of sorting it out. In their case, the problem was Clemson Orange, a very specific shade of orange seen on tens of thousands of shirts, hats, and giant foam fingers during Clemson football game broadcasts. The orange shown on TV sets and replay boards is not, in some cases, the right orange. A research project called ColorNet is using AI and neural networks to make real-time color adjustments on the fly to the broadcast signal, using an algorithm light enough that it can run on an off-the-shelf PC. I spoke with Dr. Erica Walker and graduating student Emma Mays about the project and how the technology might be applied as a low-cost box in the back of digital signage screens, so that networks run by brands can really show their true colors. The chat is a bit technical, but even I got most of it. One other note, I think at some point I referenced Clemson as being an SEC team. Wrong, it's in the ACC. I'm in Canada. Ask me about curling. Emma, Erica, thank you for joining me. Could you give me a rundown on what ColorNet is all about? I know it's a university project that you guys presented at Display Week, going back about a month or so.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us today. So ColorNet is an artificial intelligence solution for brand colors to be displayed correctly on screen. So not a color solution that would display all colors correctly. That solution already exists. This is specific to a brand color, and in this case, Clemson University orange and purple.
And because you guys are working and studying out of Clemson, correct?
That's correct. And actually, the solution could work for any color. We just happen to use the colors that that we see the most on our own campus and in our athletics.
Which is orange.
That's correct.
So this is a project coming out of the graphics communication department, or is it multiple departments?
This actually includes a lot of different departments. Each of us on the project are from a different department, in fact. So I'm from graphic communications. The students are from engineering and computer science, a variety of engineering degrees. And then my co-creator, our co-inventor, is works in a multidisciplinary department with the focus on data science.
Okay. So what's the problem you're trying to solve here?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. It is something that is very commonly talked about at Clemson Athletic Games and probably at other universities as well. But the orange is incredibly recognizable, our brand orange, for Clemson fans. And when you watch a broadcast of the football game or basketball game or baseball game, the orange is always skewed. It's always normally skewed towards red. Now, obviously, that those settings can be impacted by the settings on your screen itself. Mm-hmm. But what if we could address this at the feed level, at the camera level, at the production level?
And that would ensure that if Clemson orange is a Pantone color, that it's going to be color accurate, at least coming out of the feed.
Exactly. That's really the tipper right there, is that we don't have the control over other people's screens, like the screen inside your home. We aren't trying to make any adjustments to that. That would be the homeowner or the screen owner at the bar. I would have to make those adjustments. But we can make adjustments on the screens inside of our facilities. So the big screen inside of the football stadium, we could adjust that because we have control over it. But the main thing is just having a clean feed, having a feed where Pantone 165 is a recognizable color and it displays correctly.
And why is that a problem other than, you know, if I'm a Clemson fan, I know my orange, but if I'm a Syracuse fan, maybe it's a different orange. Is who's going to know other than the Clemson fans?
Right. So that's a fair question. On any given Saturday, there's over 70,000 people in the stadium watching the game. And so mm-hmm. that's a big audience. But in general, we just use Clemson orange as kind of the test bed for this example. So it could be done for soccer teams, in Europe, the big leagues. It could be done for Major League Baseball. It could be done for NBA finals. It could be done for really anything where brand color is recognizable to the fan of any team, of any sport.
And you can't really control the final output. Like if on my TV, if the calibration's off, it's going to show it to be orangey red instead or whatever. Like, will this help that at all?
In my head, if the feed is better, then more than likely it will show better on your TV. Now, mm-hmm. that's not true if you've, amped up your colors, or if maybe, I know there's settings that are specific to gamers that they like. And so if you've changed the color settings on your TV, then that could be a problem. But mm-hmm. one of the conversations we've been having is with these screen manufacturers, what if we could address this at the screen level as well? But obviously, the goal of artificial intelligence is not to, weasel our way into people's homes and mm-hmm. make adjustments on their TV. So that's not the goal, but we do think that we could address it in, think of like large format displays. So if you mm-hmm. go to like the Coca-Cola headquarters, they want their Coca-Cola red to display correctly on the screens that are scattered throughout their entire building or their manufacturing right. facility or, anywhere where they have the control over their screens. So kind of thinking of it from the brand level as much as from the consumer level.
Yeah. Is that really the business application here? I mean, you mentioned that there's a patent around it. Is the idea that for really super brand sensitive, brand color sensitive companies like Coca-Cola and there'd be any number of other ones that they have more of an assurance that the broadcast advertising is going to look in the color that is really important to them?
Right now, that's what we're looking at as brand applications. So like I said, there are solutions out there to solve like overall, a correct profile so that your TV shows colors accurately. So we aren't trying to necessarily do it across all colors. We're trying to really focus in on the brand colors.
Right. So how does it work and how did you get started on this? This doesn't strike me as one of those things you wake up in the middle of the night and go, I must solve this.
Right. So the basic approach that our team took is we were trying to make it where when you're color correcting, instead of correcting the entire frame, instead we're working more with image segmentation. So the current process with athletics is that oftentimes they have to pick something in the frame and color correct that and just hope everything falls out. Mm. So with basketball games, they look at the court and they say, okay, the Clemson paw print in the middle of the court has to be brand color. Everything else will just be what it has to be. But we're trying to just to get that right. The idea is that, well, what if we can make it so they don't have to compromise? So that way it can be segmented. So we're color correcting the correct areas in a frame as opposed to everything else. The idea was also to decrease kind of the manual burden on this technician when it comes to color correcting. So we looked at doing image segmentation through machine learning by creating a convolutional neural network. So the basic idea...
Oh, I know what those are.
Yes. Well, without getting into the nitty gritty...
I can spell it at least.
Yeah, we usually just look at the acronym CNN, so you don't even really have to know how to spell it. But the nice thing is, just the gist of it, we basically looked at this game footage, we pulled it, and we used Adobe Premiere Pro and the Lumetri color panel. And we basically picked the range of colors we wanted to correct. So that way we could adjust it to what's kind of perceptually that natural approximation of what we're looking at for that color brand. And then we pass in the color incorrect and correct footage into the model, and it creates a mask. And it's basically just showing pixel by pixel what's the difference in color. Mm-hmm. And so the whole idea is that our model is able to generate these masks and automatically generate like exactly what those corrections are going to look like. So once we created this data, we trained it. And then that way it learned how to color correct to these brand specifications in these image segmentations. So that way our grass isn't a weird color, our court isn't a weird color. We're just adjusting like the jerseys and the Clemson football fan gear in the audience. So it's fixing the colors that need to be fixed and leaving alone what needs to be left alone.
And is that because you're segmenting it and isolating certain elements of it? That's how you can do it in real time or near real time as opposed to in post-processing?
What makes it able to do it in real time is partially the hardware. You need hardware that can run on that. And this is it really just looks like a desktop computer, like the regular box that you're used to. But we do want it to run in real time. And so in order to do that, we try to make everything as slender as possible. So some neural networks have just millions of parameters that they're checking on. And we kept making things smaller and smaller and smaller so that it could run more efficiently. Now, there is a point where it gets too small and it runs too quickly and it's not as effective. So that's part of the research piece of this, is that the students are learning at what point do we make adjustments to make this efficient versus to make it effective.
I have this idea in my head, and again, as anybody who listens to me knows, I'm not an AI scientist or anything close, is that there's some pretty serious computing hardware, big iron, that like a server room full of computers doing the work of the neural network. But it's sounding like you're saying this is just like a little box.
Yeah, it can actually run on something as small as a Raspberry Pi, believe it or not. Wow. It doesn't run in the same frame rate that you'd want to run for an event, but we can run about 8 to 10 frames per second on a Raspberry Pi. And so it's certainly with it, you don't need an entire room full of servers in order to process this at real time. It's very doable. It's I don't pick it up and carry it around. But you certainly could if you needed to.
So this is not a $1 million addition to a TV studio or something. It's pretty elemental in some respects.
Absolutely. The really, when it comes down to it, and Emma can probably speak on this better than I can, but really all an algorithm is a text file. And, that's the... And then you have to train that, like the real meat of it on our end is training it and making it effective and making adjustments, because it is in a new area that you can't just go and Google like, hey, I'd like this algorithm that can do this. We're actually developing it and modifying it as we go.
Hmm. So for a Clemson football game, if you have, 20 cameras, 25 cameras, whatever it may be, do you need a processing unit for each of those feeds, or is a master feed kind of funnel through one box?
It can actually, we only need one. So we're actually, the way it works is, you're right, they do have like 20 cameras, and they range from like little tiny GoPro cameras up to, high-end broadcast cameras.
And 4K RED cameras or whatever.
Exactly. And so those are all processing that color so differently. But it all comes into live. It's coming into a production studio. So if you watch a lot of athletics, like NFL or even NCAA, sometimes they'll show you the trucks, and inside of the truck, all of those feeds are coming in, and they are making those adjustments on the fly as the feed comes in. They make the adjustments on the fly. They choose which camera feed they want to show, and then it gets projected out, and all of that's happening in real time. And so we actually talked about different places that ColorNet could live within the system. And the place where we landed it is that if we have it right inside of that production suite, you only need one device. Or you could have it on the other end of that production suite and you still only need one device, but it, then you're only color correcting the feed that's actually going to get put out there versus correcting all the different feeds on all the different cameras.
Is this a problem that's common to any live event broadcaster, or is it some, is it defined at all by the quality of the equipment you're using? Like, would a local community cable operator have a much bigger problem than, let's say, Fox Sports?
The problem is pervasive anytime you have brand colors. I'm going to show my age on this, but I don't know if you remember when, you know, Reese's Pieces was the product that was advertised in E.T. when E.T. came out. And so, you know, even in a Hollywood film, you have a brand and that brand cares about their colors. And so it is pervasive everywhere, but the piece of equipment actually can run anywhere. It doesn't need a fancy studio. It doesn't need, you know, ESPN type quality. It could run at any small studio just as well as it runs here, because it's running, once you've trained it, it's really running on its own. It's capable of doing the work without a lot of manual input.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75 plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So in theory, is this a box? Like, I could, I'm not making things up here, but you could order it in theory on Amazon, pull it out of the box, plug it in, you know, plug the feed in and plug the output in and give it power and off you go. Or is this a whole bunch of tweaking and software and behind the scenes to make it all happen?
To answer that, really, like, the box that we ordered, the box that this runs in, it was ordered off of Amazon. It is just like a plain old normal computer box, you know, like a desktop. But the magic happens inside of the training and inside of the algorithm and inside of the adjustment to the code. So it's not really the special sauce, so to speak, is really what happens prior to receiving the box.
Right. But do you train it, let's say, heaven forbid, that another SAC school uses this? Would that box have to be trained for the Crimson Tide colors or whatever?
Yeah, that's you actually, I think you understand a lot more about this than you're letting on, but that is 100% the case. We would have to train it each time as needed per color is our current structure. But I'm actually going to let Emma jump in on, you know, what we're thinking about moving forward.
Right. So yeah, currently when we trained for Clemson Orange and Clemson Purple, the way our data was set up, it was saying you're going to look for these range of colors around the brand colors. That way, you know, like what kinds of areas you're going to be shifting to be correct. Our goal is to try and kind of generalize it. So the idea is we can give some kind of hardware to deliver to the shader and painter with these corresponding teams. So that way they can change what color it is. So we're going to come up with a new approach to it where instead of looking for this range of colors to then shift, we're going to look for these areas. So we're hoping to train like it can pick out the jerseys where the fan colors are, and that way it's very adjustable considering what those colors are. So that way you could pick up this technology and plug it in for a different team and it could work that way instead of just being limited to a specific brand's color palette.
Right. Okay. So I'm a digital signage guy. This is a digital signage podcast. I wonder, of course, what the applications potentially are for the digital signage business. And you mentioned early on Coca-Cola and how across its corporate campus and its many corporate campuses, really, if it has a signage network with the Coca-Cola brand on there, if the output PC or PCs or media players are outputting nominally incorrect colors, this could be put in the middle of it?
Absolutely. So that's one approach that we've considered is, so let's say that, let's use our Coca-Cola campus example. They want to ensure that no matter what footage is going up on what type of screens, they may have multiple brands, I don't even know, that the Coca-Cola red is always correct. And so in that case, you actually would put ColorNet at the screen level. So you would need, you know, we would want to pull it down to a much smaller device, more like that Raspberry Pi size, so that you could actually just slap it right onto the back of each screen or each set of screens, and have the that screen is Coca-Cola ready, you know, and so you could sell it that way to a brand owner versus having it at the like the live video remix phase.
Right. Do you sense the addressable market for this has a whole bunch of brands in particular who are that color conscious, or is it a subset that, you know, really, really cares, and others who, well, you know, our brand color is blue and that's all they say?
Yeah, actually, coming from my background, I was steeped in brand from a print perspective. And so from a print perspective, the tolerance of brand colors on your, you know, the box or the bottle or the flexible packaging is very small. It's measured in delta E's, and they say it's a 2 delta E. You can't get any, most companies don't want you to be any further off the brand color specs than 2 delta E. And that's basically just a measurement saying, this is as close as we are willing to purchase the product. Like if it goes over 2 delta E, we don't want your printed product. And so coming from that background, all of the big brands care. All of them want their color to be correct. I know there's an argument going on right now that might have stemmed out of that recent NAB and SID type conversation, but from Display Week, but this idea that screens are actually changing our tolerance for brand colors. And at some point, are we not going to care so much about brand colors because we are willing to accept them further apart from the brand spec because of the screen differences that we see? I still think that brands are willing to put money, time, and effort behind their branding in general, and that they are going to care if their product looks correct, because it is as much a part of their identification as any other part of their business.
Yeah, that would make sense. I'm sure there'd be some reticence around spending thousands upon thousands of dollars per site to do that. But if it's as you say, a Raspberry Pi-like device that could just sit, plug in via the HDMI feed or whatever into the display, then yeah, maybe they'd be happy as clams to do that.
Yeah. You know, especially for those big brands, I bet you, and I've never sat in the branding room for Coca-Cola, but both Coca-Cola and Pepsi use a color of red, right?
Yeah.
I bet you that their branding teams would just go to battle over making sure that all of their products are the correct color of red, so that there is no confusion on the customer level of which product you're actually looking at.
Yeah, well, I've certainly heard those stories in the past when it comes to digital signage and Coca-Cola red and a few other colors that, yeah, the Coca-Cola people flip out if it's not right. And they had some big problems with early stage video walls and things like that. And there was a particular product that they really liked because of the saturation levels and everything that gave them, you know, as close to the print red as they wanted to see. I don't know if it was that 2E's measurement or whatever you were talking about, but it was good.
Yeah. And they'll actually, you know, some companies will have different Pantone colors for their print products compared to their screens. So for instance, Clemson has 2 different oranges. And when it comes down to it, the Pantone that they've chosen for screen and the Pantone that they've chosen for print products, so difference between CMYK and RGB, those two oranges look the same. So it comes down to this perceptual thing. So it's not always about hitting the same Pantone. It's about the perceptual brand recognition of that orange, whether it's on a car, whether it's on a screen, whether it's on a jersey, and so on.
Okay. So this is a combination product or initiative of a couple of professors and I think four students. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's correct. We had four students. I think I'm right there. And then we actually just added a new student this semester. So obviously the great part about students is that they have wonderful, fresh ideas coming into a project. The sad part is that they do graduate and go away. Actually, Emma graduates in December. And so even though we have, there is kind of this rotation of students who have worked on the project over time.
Mm-hmm. So where does it go from here? At some point, does this become a company or does it get licensed or is that just so far off that it's hard to really kind of rationalize?
Certainly from our perspective, our goals are align a lot more with the research end and sharing what we find. But from a university level, we are involved with the University Research Foundation, and their job is to help connect us with potential manufacturers or companies or lines of products that would benefit from this. And
right.
So from the university level, they have a lot of interest in that. I'm not opposed to a company or partnering with another company, partnering with an existing company. But certainly, the students getting experience out of this is in our personal research goals are primary. In the conversations with the companies provide a lot of opportunity to have funding and to expand and to come up with new ideas of how this technology could perhaps be implemented.
Is there an application as well for things like medical imaging? And seismic imaging, where life and death decisions or very expensive decisions are made based on the color of some high resolution image?
Absolutely, we have been looking at expanding this out into some different applications. And you really hit the nail on the head. Like one of the ideas that our team had bounced around is, what if this could be used to emphasize, a lifeboat or something like that that is lost at sea?
Yeah.
How could it make it really fast and really easy despite all the reflections that waves make? And we've looked at it in an agricultural thing, again, where it's emphasizing if there's healthy plants or if there's weeds. So it really could be modified and used in a lot of different contexts, just like you're saying.
Hmm. So what came out of SID, the presentation that you did? Did you have companies or other really smart people coming up or contacting you? You're saying come up because it was all virtual.
Yeah, exactly. It was not so many from virtual conferences we found, but when we've done some presentations in person, and unfortunately SID was not one of them this year, I was super excited about that audience. But when we have presented in person, it has led to lots of conversations with different companies and ideas of, how it could benefit them and their customers.
Right. Okay. So, if there are people listening to this who actually understand it fully, how would they track you down and how do they sort of get involved in this in some way or get some questions answered?
We would love to hear from people. Again, it's so exploratory still at this phase. And so hearing what real companies with real customers, what they need, like what is their pain point and how could we consider ColorNet as a potential solver of that pain point, is just reach out to us. My email is eblack4@clemson.edu. And for those of you who don't know how to spell Clemson, that's okay. It's C-L-E-M-S-O-N.
Right. Okay. And you guys have a football team, right?
We hope we have a good one again. Fingers crossed.
Now, is it a challenge because this is people think so much about Clemson as a a big sports school, football school, when this is a totally gearhead kind of science project, AI coming out of Clemson? Do they go, oh, really? You guys do that too?
Well, we're hoping that we actually solve a problem for our athletic department. So fingers crossed, we've proved it out that it can be done. And right now we're just kind of taking a backseat to whatever coronavirus brings for this coming season. Mm-hmm. But our original intent was to be up and operational for our athletic department this fall, which we're capable of doing. Again, we're just kind of taking a backseat to all the decisions that they're having to make to keep their student athletes safe and the fans safe and all of that.
Which is a moving target right now.
Absolutely.
But broadcast may be more important than ever for the next few months.
I agree. It's, there's no telling where all this is going to go, but we have our first football game on Saturday. And so fingers crossed, everybody stays healthy and well, and we can get that type of normalcy, back for Saturdays.
Mm-hmm. All right. Erica and Emma, thank you so much for spending some time with me. I really appreciate it.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks for inviting us.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.